Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
All right, guys, this is Toby Mathis and
Jeff Webb,
and this is Tax Tuesday. So welcome to another fun-filled Tax Tuesday. Anyway, we're going to be going over a lot of stuff today. I grabbed a lot of extra questions from the last week just to give us a lot more structure so you guys could see what's coming out at a time. If you ask a very complicated question, then you better be a client with Platinum and we'll answer it. If you answer really like a basic question, we're just going to either grab it and put it on the air, either part of one of the questions, which I'll go over here this week's of all the stuff we're going to answer. The whole idea is to be fast and fun and educational. The whole idea here is to answer questions without having to incur a bunch of fees. We are thinking on our feet here, guys. So a lot of times if you email one in and we grab it and put it as one of our featured questions, we'll have already looked at some of the answers. Other times, if you're just asking us, we're answering the best we can. We try not to play hide the ball. Jeff is way smarter than me. That's why I keep him here so he can answer your questions and I just guess, right? No. The whole idea is we want to give back. Taxes aren't something that should be scary. They should be something where we look at and minimize to the best of our ability. It's actually in the government's best interest if you don't pay your taxes on every dollar that you make. If you don't, like, if I paid 100% tax, there's no money left for me to invest. So the old adage is like one of our first questions about the IRAs and self-directed IRAs and 401ks is it's better for the government for you to save that money and defer it because they'll actually get more money in the long run. As your wealth increases and they're taxing it after a long period of time, the actual dollars they receive is actually significantly higher. So I always look at it and say taxes should be something that you should feel kind of patriotic about deferring as long as possible, minimizing as long as possible, and taking advantage of the laws as they're written because they're incentivizing certain types of behavior. In many cases, that's businesses. All right, so let's jump into some of the questions. Here's the ones we're going to be going over today. Can I roll over my 401k into a self-directed IRA to invest in real estate? We will answer that. If you sell a flip, can you put the gain into your residential mortgage and avoid the taxes? We'll go over that. We'll explain what a flip is to some of you guys who don't know. Can you deduct meals eaten at home while working from home? Will I be penalized for not making estimated tax payments quarterly? I know that's like, well, on some people's minds, this is the first year they might be paying. Are premiums for a long-term disability insurance deductible as a business expense in an LLC? How do I set up my entity's bank account? What are the pros and cons of having a holding LLC? And I'll explain what that is to those of you guys who don't know. What's the best way to pay your child's tuition if you're running a profitable business? Last two, I told you we were going to go over a lot more this time just because I wanted to really give you guys some even more value. Love answering the questions off the top, but when you guys take the time to email them in, I'm going to grab them. What's the best structure for both flipping and holding property at the same time? I don't know how you do that at the same time, but I'm just teasing. Are self-directed IRA fees tax deductible? That's one of my favorites because the answers changed in the last year.
Yep.
So if you'd asked a year ago, we'd be giving you a different answer. Anyway, so we're going to go over all of these and more. So let's get right on in. Can I roll over my 401k to a self-directed IRA to invest in real estate? The answer is absolutely. However, do you really want to? Because depending on the 401k, again, there's two types. There's multi-employee plans where it's an employer and they have lots of employees in it, and there's restrictions on what kind of investments you do. And then there's the solo 401k that you control. And honestly, you're better off using that 401k for the investment in real estate if that's what you're doing, because you don't need a custodian. You can sign your own closing docs. You don't have unrelated debt finance income issues. In other words, you can borrow money, whereas in an IRA, you have to pay the tax on it. IRAs are also single owners. So if spouses are buying a property in their IRAs, well, there's actually two owners on that property. Yeah. Or you're setting up an LLC, which is actually my preferred method. You're setting setting up an LLC inside of the IRA, it's called a checkbook IRA, or an LLC inside of the 401k to make sure that you don't have unlimited exposure to the liabilities that could come from that real estate. So if you own real estate in a self-directed IRA, you're ultimately, as the individual retirement account holder, you're personally liable for the activities. So if you have a rental property or an IRA and there's a slip and fall, you're ultimately responsible. So we always want to make sure that we're cognizant of asset protection when we're setting this up. But yes, you can absolutely roll it and use a self-directed IRA, or you could just use a solo 401k, or if this is with an employer and a past employer, and they allow you to roll the plan. I mean, if it's a past employer, you can absolutely roll the plan. If it's a current employer, they could say, no, you can't until you leave service. But if you have an old 401k and you want to roll it in, one of the best things you can do is set up a business and have it sponsor a 401k. You just remove the issues. Nothing against IRA custodians, but they don't work on weekends. So if you're buying property and you're there on a Saturday and it's a bidding situation, you're not closing and you're not able to even bid because you can't get a signed offer from the custodian until they get back in the office. So if you want to avoid that, you use a solo 401k. All right. We have lots of questions. I don't see any of them pertaining to that one. So I'm going to skip through to the next one. Do you want to add anything?
I'm good. I'm just watching.
All right. Some of this stuff is more a lawyer than accountant. So in that particular case, as long as you go on plan to plan, you don't have to worry. And I guess I could twist words. We could play the Roth game and say, well, it has to be a traditional IRA 401k to a traditional, or a Roth IRA 401k would have to go to a Roth IRA. You cannot go back from a Roth IRA into a Roth 401k. A lot of people don't know that. So we can twist it.
Right.
But we don't. No, we're not going to do that, even though we just did. All right. If you sell a flip, and a flip is when you buy a property to sell it. A lot of people think that's within a year. There's no actual time frame on it. It's if you buy it and you intend to sell it, that's a flip. Can you put the gain into your residential mortgage and avoid the taxes? Jeff, what do you think?
No, the answer is no, absolutely not. What you're doing is you're taking the gain from your flip and you're just making principal payments, and principal payments have no effect on taxation.
That's absolutely right. So if you sell a flip, the tax implications on that, that's not like there's only one thing I could really think of that you could do with that flip money and avoid tax, and that's possibly putting it into a qualified opportunity zone. Is there any other way to defer it?
Well, could you even do that since it's not really capital gain?
It's still, I guess what I see what you're saying is short-term capital gain. You'd have to, if it typical flip, you're a dealer, that's ordinary income.
That's ordinary income.
So we got to offset it with ordinary expenses. Yeah, that's even tough. You'd still have to have an investment. So I can't really think of a way that you could defer it. But anyway, so when you're doing a flip, think of it like you're a mini mart and you're selling Cheerios, boxes of Cheerios, or better yet, you're a used car lot. You're grabbing cars, you're fixing them up and selling them on your car lot. You can't depreciate it. You can't do installment sales. You can't do 1031 exchanges. You lose a lot of the stuff. So there's not really anything where you can defer it.
Right. I mean, well, you can do an installment sale, a literal installment sale, sell it on installments. That still doesn't defer your gain. You still have to pay tax on your gain.
Yep. You have to pay
in the
tax,
current year,
even though you haven't received the money yet. So you can still do an installment sale, but from a tax standpoint.
But that's a good thing to keep in mind.
You are such a tax geek.
That if you do a flip, that you may not want to do it on installment basis because you may not have the cash to pay your taxes.
Here we go. Is interest income from the performing notes considered ordinary income? Yeah.
Yes.
It's ordinary income. Good call. Can you take capital gains that exceed the 180-day rules and put the funds into an opportunity zone? Take the advantage of the benefit. Okay. So, Nicola, no, you cannot. Like, you could put them into the opportunity zone, but you can't take advantage of the 10 years. That's only for deferred gain. So for those of you who don't know what the opportunity zone is, we'll probably answer a question about it tonight. I've been talking about it since they passed that law in December 2017, but you can defer taxes for 7 years now and pay on only 85% of it and pay zero gain on the assets that are held for or the qualified opportunity fund, the assets really that are held for 10 years or above. And you can actually roll assets into each other. That just came out in the new reg. So what is an opportunity zone? See, Jimmy, That's why you're hanging out here. An opportunity zone are areas in the country that are economically disadvantaged, where the Tax Cut and Jobs Act gave these huge incentives for people to invest in them. And if, just for giggles, it's 26 USC 1400Z 1 and 2. So it's 1400Z 1 and 2. Anyway, so the Opportunity Zone gives us two huge monstrous advantages. Number one, it's available for any capital gains as long as you invest in an opportunity fund, which owns Opportunity Zone property, which an opportunity fund is an LLC taxed as a partnership or a corporation or a plain vanilla corporation or a plain vanilla partnership. And it owns 90% of qualified Opportunity Zone property, which could be the actual property itself or a business in that area. And then the business has to be like 70% of its income has to be in the Opportunity Zone. Like it gets all crazy. We get down to 63% of the money is actually derived in the Opportunity Zone. You still get this benefit. So what you're doing is you're, let's just use an example. If I sell some Bitcoin for $1 million and I put it in the Opportunity Zone. And again, these are geographic areas. You can heat map Opportunity Zone and it'll pop up a map. If you Google heat map Opportunity Zone, you'll be able to see it. And you'll see all these different areas. All states have them. They proposed them in 2018 and they were all approved. But you could see certain zip codes where they're calling it an opportunity zone. If you invest in that and you invest in a fund that invests in opportunity zone property, then you can get these benefits. And the benefits are twofold. Number one, I can defer my gain that I rolled into an opportunity fund within 180 days of my sale date or 180 days from the end of the tax year, depending on the type of gain it was. I'm not going to get into all this stuff today, but you may have a period. But if you sell your Bitcoin on January 1st, you have until the end of June to invest in an opportunity zone. It doesn't have to be the same money either. It's just anything. So the beautiful part is you do not have to pay tax on that until 2026.
Right.
And you only have to pay tax on 85% of it. And it's still long-term capital gains if you owned it for long-term capital gains. So that's number one. Number two is whatever you invested in, that gain, if you held it for 10 years, you never have to pay tax on it. So if you, I'll give you guys, a lot of you guys are real estate folks, you have to double the value of the improvement on the real estate. So I buy a tract of land with a building on it. The building's worth $500,000. The tract of land is worth $600,000. I have to put $500,000 into it. So it's $500,000, the improvement, $100,000, the land. I don't care about the land. I care about the improvement. So I have to double that. So I put $1.1 million into it, and I defer $1.1 million. I only have to pay tax on 85% of that, so about $900,000 in 7 years. So like I get a, first off, I get a big deferral, and I don't have to pay 100% of the tax. Then I hold that $1.1 million building, let's say, for 20 years, and it goes up to $5 million, and I sell it for $5 million. Guess how much tax I pay? Jeff, how much tax do I pay?
Zero.
Yep. So I get a big, huge, fat tax benefit. That's an opportunity zone. That's why it's a big deal. So anyway, I don't even know how we got onto that.
And it's good that if they look at that heat map, you'll see the typical urban areas around big cities.
Yeah.
But you'll also see a lot of areas that are in rural sections of the country that may be suffering from lower income and low values. And so they're really all over the place.
Yep. Yeah, so somebody's at, now we have a whole bunch of questions. And how would you tie a private IRA to your corporations? You don't. They're individual. What you do is you get a 401k. And let's say opportunity zone, besides your capital gains amount, isn't a requirement to put new dollars equating to gain amount into rehab the property. Yes, you have to improve the. If you buy land, you have to double it. If it's just land, you have to put in whatever you paid within 31 months. So it's not as bad as you guys think. If you are fixing up a building, you have to double the improvement, just the improvement value. You can get the tax assessor and figure out what the land value is, any reasonable method,
right.
I believe. But if you buy a regular business, then you're like, you don't have to worry about any of that stuff. You're just putting the money into the business. So as long as it's being used. And it's really awesome. Can sales proceeds from properties held in personal and passive entities go into the same fund? Yes, absolutely. Lloyd, you can combine them. And you can do multiple contributions to the same fund. And you can set up a fund. Like Anderson, we set up those funds all the time. It's just an election that you make in the first tax year. You got to have a little bit of magic language in the LLC, which is what I prefer to use. And yeah, you can create your own fund. And it's absolutely awesome. And you could have mixed assets into it. You could throw you know, you can use the gain, but you don't just have to put in the cash from it. You can put in other assets too. Like there's other things you can do to get it. So, and the next big question is, can you deduct meals eaten at home while working from home? What do you think?
I don't think this is probably a wise thing to do. You may differ in your opinion, but I'm not sure that I would want to do this. We talked about, you know, if you're meeting with somebody in your home and you have a meal and it's business related, then you have an argument. But
the answer is, can you deduct? Yes, technically you can, because if so, here's the deal. If I'm traveling away from home, then I can write off my meals when I'm away from home.
Right.
If I'm at home, then I have to have a business purpose for it. And the business purpose is I have to be trying to make some money. So the who, what, why, where, when, and all that fun and why becomes really important, which means when you're eating at home, you better have a darn good reason that's business related. The only business related reason I can see that you're eating at home and calling it a business meal is if you are actually having clients over or somebody that you intend to do business with.
Yep.
And you're actually trying to get that future business while eating there. The other way you could do it to get it, and that would be 50% deductible. And so, Tony, you just asked, is there a certain amount you can deduct for business meals? It's just as long as it's not lavish and that's not a dollar amount that is.
Have they ever said what they consider lavish? I didn't
think
so.
There's $10,000 meals out there that they still do it. So you guys are not going to be in that category. Just people that I've never, in 20-something years, I've not run across a single client that ever had to worry about lavish. $10,000 bottle of wine, maybe, right? But you better get, as long as you have a reason why you're doing it and there's a business reason, the IRS isn't in the habit of second guessing if you make bad business decisions. But meals, when you're eating at business, they're assuming that it's more expensive than a personal meal. So they let you write off half. And if you want to get 100%, then a business meal at your home while you're doing a presentation to the general public, you can write off. See, have to sucker punch Jeff. Yes. Then you could do it. Like, so if you have a bunch of people over and you give them a presentation, and we have clients that do this, that do MLMs or whatever else, and maybe they're bringing somebody up and they're showing them materials and giving a presentation right off the whole thing, 100%. Yay. Or there's one other 100%. What is it, Jeff? Do you know?
The other 100%?
The other 100%. There's only one.
The company picnic?
The company holiday party. Dang straight. Yeah, you can have a big old hump. We're going to order pizza. We're going to write the whole thing off. Hey, it's little victories. Come on. How about a corporate meeting at home, 288? Yes, you can write that off 100%, but it's not. Yeah, you could. Here's what you have to do. You have to say the meal is included with the structure.
Yep.
Then you can write it off. So, Gio, you get a big old star because that's a great. You saw that one and we were just sitting here thinking we're smart and you got it and we didn't. Somebody asked a question about opportunities. We got a whole bunch. Where did that go? She's saying like, hey, I asked this about that. I don't actually see it. So I don't think, if you want to shoot me another question, because I didn't get the actual question. It was evidently cut off. Question was cut off. Where is it? Yeah, I just don't see it. So send it again. Oh, there's one. In the Opportunity Zone Fund, can you take the loans the same way against rental properties? Asset protection rules still apply. So if you have an Opportunity Zone, you can have LLCs held by that Opportunity Zone Fund. Absolutely. And there's no guidance right now on the taxation of loans. In fact, the only guidance we have is that you can borrow money against the assets. So it looks like you have a lot of leeway, and they're basically giving us, in the regulations, they just came out with 180 pages about 2 weeks ago. They're giving us way more than we anticipated.
Do you know if the guidance actually says that the loan has to be reinvested into the...
Does it have to be reinvested?
Yeah.
I didn't see that in the reg.
I'm not sure if it's in there or not.
I know that if you want to, like, if you sell an asset in an opportunity zone and they said, hey, it's not fair that if you sell it, you have a taxable event when you should be able to reinvest it, like a 1031. And they said, yes, you can reinvest it as long as it's reinvested within a year. So you can buy properties. Technically, I guess you could be flipping inside the opportunity zone, have a smorgasbord there. Why can't I put flip money into a 1031 exchange? Because flip money is ordinary income. It's not capital gains. And you have to be, so a 1031 is for investment property. When you flip, you are no longer an investment.
Yeah, your property is considered inventory.
Yep.
And by definition, inventory is not eligible for 1031 treatment.
Your house is no different than a car on a car lot once you're flipping. So if you want to defer it, you can. The good news is if I sell a house that's an investment, I can't put money into the 401k with that cash. That's not active ordinary income. If I sell a flip, I can defer it in a 401k. So we'll get that. How much can you write off for meals and travel? As much as you want. 50% for meals, travels, 100%. There's nothing. If you're over $75, you have to have a receipt for the transaction. If you're less than $75, you don't have to have a receipt.
Yeah, there's no dollar limitation.
Yeah. What they do have is we call it the too many lunch rule. And there's other practitioners that I stole that from. So they call it the 100 lunch rule or whatever you call it. If you keep meeting with the same people over and over again, and you do it over 100 times in a year, they're going to say that's no longer business, that's personal. So what we say is write off whatever you want, whatever you can justify. Just make sure that it's not you and your spouse every meal, right? Not that you would lose, but they would definitely question it. All right, next one. Will I be penalized for not making estimated tax payments quarterly? What do you say, Jeff?
Well, it depends on if you're required to make estimated payments. If your withholding is substantially less than your tax is, then you're going to have been required to make estimated payments. And those penalties are actually calculated each quarter. So there's a penalty for your first quarter payment, your second quarter payment, your third quarter payment. And some people think if I just pay all my estimated taxes in the fourth quarter, that'll save me. And actually, it won't. You'll still get paid penalties for the first three quarters.
Yep. There's a publication out there, 505, that you can look at for the estimated tax. It gets a little complicated. General rule, 90%, you're okay.
Yes, 90% of your current year liability or 110% of your prior year liability.
Yeah, so whenever we see somebody, and if you don't expect to be making a profit more than $1,000, you don't have to do withholding period. I mean, not withholding, but
if your tax owed it when you file your return is less than $1,000,
then don't worry about it.
Right.
But if you had taxes before and the previous year, you can use 110% of that amount and avoid penalties if you.
Yeah, and we always say 110% of the prior year when the rule is actually, I think if you made less than $150,000, it's 100%. But
then somebody says, what if the company is not making money? So estimated taxes are for individuals and partnerships and S corporations. And if the company is not making any money, then you don't have an estimated tax. So you don't have to worry about it.
It's for individuals and corporations.
Individuals and corporations. Wouldn't it be a partnership too, would you say?
No, because that passes through.
Yeah. So S corporation passes
right through.
C corp, do they have quarterlies that they're worried
yes.
about too? So yeah. So.
And the problem with C corporations, if you had no tax last year, that prior year protection, no safe harbor doesn't exist.
Then you're looking at it saying, hey, if you anticipate that you're going to be making money, then, but these penalties aren't monstrous. Are
no, they? It's probably a lower interest rate than you can get by getting a loan at the bank.
What is it, 6% or something like that?
It's 0.5% a month or 6%.
Yeah. All right. So here's a bunch of questions just because people are asking them. Can I do a 1031 exchange with stock I recently sold? No, you cannot do a 1031 exchange. It has to be real estate to real estate. However, Milana, you could actually do a qualified opportunity zone fund if you want to defer it. You have 180 days to do it. How can you properly structure a living trust account to trade the market and be taxed, not as employee or self-employed? You can't do that with a living trust. What you're going to do is, if you're trading in the market, you're going to usually have an LLC tax as a partnership with the corporation as a partner, as one of the LLC members, but have it taxed as a partner so you can pay it guaranteed payments. The reason you do that is because miscellaneous itemized deductions are gone. They took them away with the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, so you can't write stuff off. So if you want to write off things against your trading, then you have two choices. You either do it that way or you trade so much and that's your big source of income that you qualify as a trader. Most people don't. They get audited just for doing it. So I tend to be anti-trader. Can you repeat that again about business meals you can write off? Stop that. We went like 10 minutes into that. Let's see. Personal property. If I transfer to an LLC, are there tax consequences? No. Generally speaking, unless you have a bunch of debt against it or if it's in another partnership. If it's just you own a car or something and you put it in an LLC, there's not a tax consequence for doing it. How can I lease company equipment back to my LLC? You enter into a lease agreement and you lease it. Carl, it's just like anything else with another individual. I don't like leases for the most part because you have sales tax on them. So I always look at it and say, hey, if I have like really expensive equipment and it's like I want to make sure it stays out of my business, then I'll lease it. but there's a reason I'm doing it. Like, I have a really good reason for doing it, which is my business may be subject to some liabilities and I don't want that equipment being taken.
Well, and I was going to say that if you're going to lease personally to your, you want to be an LLC also for that, with that equipment.
Uh-huh.
A good example is what just happened was at San Francisco with a falling crane.
Mm-hmm.
Not only is that company in trouble that was using that crane, the company that they leased it from also has liability. So you really want to protect yourself against stuff like that.
We draft up those agreements, and I can just tell you that for few and far between, it's rare that you see something that's really worth that much. Even though you're still going to isolate it. You're going to isolate it like crazy and you're going to get insurance. So that you're taking the big bullseye off of your back. Boy, lots of questions are coming in. Let's see. I wanted to go over some of the ones that they just asked. Is it allowed to do a 1031 exchange into existing real estate property for improvements? So Raju, the answer is typically no, but there is something called a reverse exchange. But you had to have acquired the existing property through an intermediary. And if that's not something you did, then the answer is no. How do you determine the appropriate guaranteed payment amount? Todd, it's reasonable amount. So there's two ways to do it. You either say, here's the amount that I'm paying you as a guaranteed amount, or you have the corporation own 20%, 30%, 40% of the actual partnership, and that automatically flows over to them. Somebody else asked, can you identify the amounts for federal tax, Medicare, Social Security, et cetera, when you make your quarterly tax payments? So there's the Dan question for self-employment tax. In other words, all right, when you're paying an estimated tax, are you saying, hey, this is not just my income, but this is for Social Security, this is my old age, death and survivors, and my Medicare?
Yes. The estimated taxes are calculated on your taxable income.
Yeah, your total tax. So you don't have to break it down, I don't believe.
No.
When you're doing withholding, that's different. So like I have the slide that you're looking at right now has withholding and an estimated tax. Withholding is against employees. So if you're paying a wage, then you automatically do the withholding. If you're not, you're paying the estimated tax, but you're not having to break it up. So.
And from my point of view, withholding is always a better choice than estimated taxes. So if you're taking distributions from your retirement plan, go ahead and withhold on them. We can help with that calculation of how much you need. But because that withholding, even if it's withheld on December 31st, is considered to have been taken out the whole year.
Mm-hmm. Good point. All right. So somebody has said, what's an intermediary in a 1031 exchange? Whenever you have a 1031 exchange, you cannot touch the money. You have to have a qualified intermediary touching the money. So if I exchange to a 1031 exchange, I can't actually receive the money from the sale. It goes into an account held by a third party, and then it gets reinvested into more real estate. It could be multiple pieces of real estate. It could be a whole bunch of stuff. It doesn't have to just be one piece of property, and it doesn't have to be the exact same type of real estate.
Right. It's pretty wide open for what type of real estate.
In a reverse exchange, you're identifying the property ahead of time. You're acquiring it, which means you have to have the cash. And you have 180 days once you acquire it to fix it up and sell the other property and enroll its gain into it. If you're doing a traditional 1031 exchange, yes, there's a timeline, Roger. It's 180 days from the date of closing. You have 45 days to identify property or properties. There's some different rules there. And then you close it. All right. Are premiums for long-term disability insurance deductible as a business expense in an LLC? Jeff, you live there.
Yes, you can reimburse long-term disability insurance, but it's limited.
So here's the weird thing. When you say business expense in an LLC, so first off, an LLC is not a tax-designated entity. So your LLC could be you as a sole proprietor, in which case it's no. Your LLC could be you as a partner in a partnership, and then the answer is no. The LLC could be an S-corp, in which case the answer is no. It's included as wages. Or it could be a corporation, a C-corp, in which case the answer is yes. Now you can. So.
And you know where my mind went straight to C-corp.
Yeah, you go to the C-corp, and you're looking at it saying, all right, my long-term disability insurance, is it deductible as a business expense only for a C-corp, unless it's for a spouse in a sole proprietorship, in which case you're covering them under the, and they're working and they're actually providing lots of time and value and stuff like that. They actually look at those pretty skeptically, but
yes,
it is possible to do it. My thing is always to say, hey, LLC tax is a corporation or just a flat out corporation. Now, I don't want to be misleading to you guys. You could potentially deduct it as a medical expense on your personal, but as all things on your Schedule A, it's crazy. They make you, like, this is maddening. If you're 40 years or under, the maximum amount as a medical expense you could even try to write off for your long-term care is $420. If you're 71 or older, that's $5,270. And what that is that's added on to your other medical expenses. If it exceeds 10% of your adjusted gross income, then you can write it off.
That part that exceeds the 10%?
It has to exceed 10%. So really, you never get to write it off unless you have a lot of stuff. But all right. Is there an exemption on capital gains depending on the gross income for the year? My accountant said something about as long as you make less than $38,000 gross income, there's no tax on capital gains. Is that correct? No. He's talking about long-term capital gains. And what they're looking at is as long as the capital gains and your income, as long as when you add those up, you're below $38,000, then the long-term capital gains rate is zero. If it's above that, it goes to 15%. And if it's above, I don't know, it's like
about 400.
So actually, I had to look at it. I have it here somewhere. If it's over married filing jointly for $479,000, then it's 20%. So RM, the answer to your question is, as long as your gross, if you add up the gain, is less, then your long-term capital gains are zero, but also your any dividends out of a qualified corporation are zero because they're treated the same way. So here we go. Can you describe the process, timing, deadlines, and tax implications of someone writing a check from their personal account to a C-Corp LLC and holding company to get the checking account set up? So first off, you threw a bunch of stuff out there. There's only one that was actually a tax designation, and that's a C-Corp. So assume that that LLC and holding company is a partnership, an individual. In any case, you're not going to have a taxable event when you contribute it, because you're either going to call it a contribution or buying stock or a loan or any number of things. But it's not taxable under any of those. If it's over $10,000 that you put in, like you write a big old fat check to a C-Corp, you're going to have some imputed interest if it's a loan. If it's a paid-in capital, then there's no tax implications and it can return the money to you at any time.
Yeah, as far as the timing and deadlines of getting that checking account set up, the sooner the better. Is it fatal if you don't get it set up right away? No, but just get it done and over with. And this process, if you have one of those entity binders that we send you, just take that whole binder with you when you go to get your account set up. Everything they're going to ask for is going to be in that binder.
Yep. If we did it. Yeah. If somebody else did it, then good luck. No, I'm just kidding. Usually they do one thing well. Like they got the filing and then they're like, where's the operating agreement? I have to go get one of those. And then when they get the operating agreement, then it's usually like, all right, where are all the other members? They need to sign too. And you're like, oh crap, I should have done a manager manage. But like, there's always these little getches. If you just go to somebody who knows how to do it and works with banks, that's usually the easiest part. The cool part about like the holding company and an LLC that's basically a safe haven, like it's basically a virtual safe. Think of it like putting cash in your safe. So if you walk over and you put money in your safe, do you have to do an IRS notice? No. Is there a tax implication? No. What if I take the money out of my safe? Yeah, there's none. So I could be popping money in and out of there all day long. And there's just, all you're doing is just running an account. You're supposed to keep track of what's in there is all.
Right.
How much did I put in? How much did I take out? But it's not a taxable. So do you recommend making a cash deposit or a loan on a capital contribution? So do you like to put money in exchange for stock, or do you like making a loan?
When I started my LLC, the initial money I put in what we call additional paid-in capital.
Mm-hmm.
My company's an S corporation, a professional limited liability company. But yeah, because I knew that if I need to, I could pull that money back out.
Right.
Tax-free.
It's really, there's people that like it. And I'll tell you what, if without getting down too far a rabbit hole, if we do a paid-in capital, if we loan and we ever decide we're going to dissolve that company and take a loss, we're going to make it paid in capital anyway. We're going to contribute the loan actually to the company in exchange for stock at that time. So like, you're not super stuck.
And here's our general preferences for if it's taxed as a partnership, we make it a capital contribution.
Mm-hmm.
If it's an S corporation, we prefer that it be additional paid in capital.
It's easier because you just have your capital account.
Right.
Just take it out.
If it's a C corporation, we prefer it to be a shareholder loan.
That's because you have a separate taxpayer and there's no tax liability. If it goes over $10,000, you got to have a little bit of imputed interest or pay a little interest.
Yeah.
Let's see. We have so many questions, but again, I have so many of these things to go through. I'm going to get to your questions. Hang tight. I know some of you guys are asking multi-part questions. Try to make your question on one line if possible. Like not one line, but just in one jaunt. Don't send me three questions, because there's three or four coming in every minute here right now. What are the pros and cons of having a holding LLC? Well, this is interesting. From a tax standpoint, it's not going to have a huge impact on your bottom line. In fact, the holding LLC really came about because you want to make everybody walk through a single gauntlet if they're going to try to take your properties. So if they come after you personally, and we are setting up LLCs in different states wherever real estate is, there's a good chance they're just going to take the LLC from you. If you put it into a holding LLC in a state like Wyoming, they can't take the LLC from you. It makes it really, really tough. From a tax standpoint, if you are going in for a loan, the holding LLC is your best friend. You'll make it taxed as a partnership more than likely if it's long-term holds. You don't really want to have long-term hold properties in a corporation, whether it's an S or a C. It's usually bad because if you take it out, it's considered wages. Appreciated property in the hands of the shareholder is treated as though it's wage income. So that's really bad. So you want to make sure that LLC, that holding LLC, is either you disregarded or a partnership to you and a spouse, or to you and maybe having another party in there that can own it. The whole idea is that if you do a partnership, then if you are going in for a loan on those properties, they have a tax return to look at that is not just yours. If it's going to go on your Schedule E, it's going to go on page 2 of your Schedule E if it's coming through a partnership. If it is not, it's on your page 1, which will end up being, like, depending on how many properties you have, could be 20 pages. I've seen page 1s that were 30 pages long because there's just 3 properties for every page, and you end up with all these properties all over the place. So the pros, there's not really any cons to having a holding LLC. First off, if you do it right, it's only pros. It's literally the only con I could think of is if I have a partnership return, I have to pay to have a partnership return done. I may, depending on where I put it, I may have a couple of expenses, registered agent, an office suite in a state that I want to use. But again, you're not doing that if there's not a bunch of pros. In other words, you wouldn't do that just because, hey, I think I'm going to do it. So I'm just looking at it saying I have no idea why a real property investor, like somebody who has multiple properties, why you wouldn't use a holding LLC. It's usually if they have a whole bunch of different partners and they're all different, varying things, and they're all hodgepodge, then it might be a little tough. But I can still make an argument that all your holdings should be in a single LLC to make it very easy for you to do your accounting and for your tracking and your business planning and everything else. Because otherwise, it's like having a whole bunch of children. Mm-hmm. They're all trying to get different loans and things. It just makes it a bit of a nightmare. And I see you guys have lots of questions, but we're still going to go through these last few. Then we'll get into all your questions. What is the best way to pay your child's tuition if you're running a profitable business? So first off, it's child's tuition. Jeff, I know you love this.
There are 3 different code sections that deal with it. It's 117A, which deals with scholarships and grants. Code section 127, which is your education assistance program. And then 132D, which is your working condition fringe benefits.
Which is my favorite.
And I'll tell you the problems with all these. The 117A, the scholarships, usually doesn't work because IRS's intention is that it's for you to help out other people.
If you're greater than a 5% shareholder, you can't do it?
No, that's on the 127.
127. So is there a way to even take it?
The scholarships and grants, first off, I'd want to run it through a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. Rather than through my company directly.
But if you're benefiting only the
but if you're benefiting, and one of the big reasons they usually make it taxable to the beneficiary is the company benefited from it. So 127, the education assistance program, that's where we get into any 5% shareholders can only benefit up to 5% of total funds distributed.
Right. So don't do that unless you have a whole bunch of employees and you're benefiting their kids more than your own.
Now, what the code says in 127 is the shareholder, their spouse, and their dependents.
Oh, wow. So it's like a big laundry list.
Right. So I'm seeing that possibly, I don't know what you think about this, possibly if I have my adult son who comes to work for me, that maybe I can do this for him. Mm-hmm. He is no longer my dependent.
Yep. So I could probably do it there. But why do that? Why go through that whole rigmarole when there's some other, there's other options?
And again, you cannot discriminate. If you have more than one employee, you have to offer it to everybody.
Yep. So number one, if you have a business reason, the business is benefiting, it can just pay the tuition, period. You don't have to worry about all the percentages and everything else.
Right. You don't have to have a plan. This is our working condition fringe benefit.
Yep. If it benefits the business by improving your skills, then, or if it's required, like I'm an attorney, I have to go do continuing education. Company can pay for my continuing education. Jeff's a CPA. He has continuing education. Company can pay for his continuing education. So that's number one. But if you have a child, so let's use your term, child. So I'm assuming that they're under 24 and that it's something where they're going to college. And what's the best way to get their tuition out of it? I would pay the child. And the reason I'd pay the child is because once they're out of your home and they're going to school, they have $12,000 a year tax-free. That's their standard deduction. And their tax rate, even if they go above that, what is it? I'm going to look at single. Let's see. Single in 2018 was, they were at 12% between $9,000 and $38,000. So A, they had like the first $12,000 is tax-free no matter what. They have a standard deduction. And then anything above that, it's like 12%. I mean, it's better than yours. Let's just put it that way. So you're better off having the kid do it. And frankly, if you're paying them and they do an IRA and some other fun stuff, you could defer the heck out of it and just say, hey, you know what? I'm not going to worry about it. If you really want to get technical, here's a real twisted way to do it, is you put your kid on your company and then pay them deferred out of a 401k, pay them $19,000, stick it in their 401k first off. Number two, pay them $12,000 in addition to that so that they have a standard deduction. Their tax rate is now zero. And of that $19,000, you could borrow $9,500 of it. So now you have almost $22,000 completely tax-free. That's a twisted way. That's how we think here.
If you can avoid getting student loans, you're doing your child a favor.
Yeah. Please don't get them student loans. And especially if it's an English degree. No offense to English majors. But you're subsidizing the engineers in some of these schools. I'm just teasing. My mom's like an English
major. I mean, student loans is a private industry now.
Just do a cost-benefit analysis. Don't spend $200,000 on a degree that is going to keep you in the $30,000 range.
Right.
So,
It's unfortunate that so many of our...
Skyrocket.
Attention all real estate investors, business owners, stock traders, and anyone looking to get out of the rat race for good. We all know time is money, but did you know there's a wealth of resources on how to make more money, keep more money, and protect what you've earned all for free online? Anderson Business Advisors YouTube channel offers free resources on asset protection and tax reduction from lawyers and CPAs designed to help you keep more money in your pocket. To learn how to limit your liability, protect what you've earned, and minimize your tax burden all for free, subscribe to Anderson Business Advisors on YouTube today.
All right, so we've come over a few things. And hey, guys, as in all things tax, you can always come and come to TaxWise and spend some time, subscribe to our podcast. I'll give you all the details of how you can do that here in one. Someone says, what a philosophy degree is a good investment. I'd have to think about that, philosophize on it. Actually, you got some great philosophy things. All right, what's the best structure for flipping and holding property at the same time? Wow, that's an interesting one. I'm going to map this out for you guys real quick just because, because it's really two types of activity. And so the easiest way to look at it is I have active stuff and I have passive. We've talked about flipping a couple times tonight. It's a business. Flipping is a business. Passive is investments. So what's the best structure for doing both? You'd want to make sure that you're very clear to the IRS which one is which. We do not want them confused because they tend to go with what's worse. So if I am running and I'm doing a flipping business, my structure is almost always going to be an S corp or a C corp for those flips. And that could be an LLC taxed as an S corp or a C corp too. If I am going to hold property, I'm almost always going to be an LLC and either taxed as a partnership in a holding company or disregarded for tax purposes. So they just go straight onto my page one of my Schedule E. So I'm going to do it to where I'm doing the least amount of harm and I'm being very clear to the IRS and to the world. Here's my active business. Here's my passive business. And that way you can get the most benefit. Because if you're a passive investor and you're paying tax, that's a shocker. Like if you're in real estate and you're buying properties, there are so many ways to keep that from being taxable to you that you're just not trying very hard if you're paying tax on it. Like there's ways to do it. We can accelerate the depreciation. We could buy other real estate that creates more depreciation if we have the if we don't have enough depreciation in the other properties. Borrow out and buy more, if you need more depreciation. So there's ways to do it. There's always ways. Last one, and I think these are the last set questions. Yay. are self-directed IRA fees tax deductible? This is our favorite question because the answer is now a resounding
no.
You cannot. Self-directed IRA fees, you could pay them or the IRA could pay them, but they are not tax deductible to you. If the IRA pays them, they're not tax deductible to the IRA, but the IRA is not paying tax. So it's just lowering what your overall objective is. This is why IRAs, again, I tend to prefer 401ks. And the reason I do is because that's a business retirement account where the business can pay it and write it off. So are self-directed IRA fees tax deductible? No, they used to be deductible on your Schedule A.
And if you paid them, not the IRA.
Yeah, if you paid them individually and you'd write it off on your Schedule A, now you cannot because miscellaneous itemized deductions no longer exist. All right, somebody is saying, where should I deposit a $50,000? This is always a... I bought a house at auction. It never got titled because the previous owner contested the sale in court. Instead of going through court litigation, I told him to write me a check for $50,000 profit as a fee. Wow. And I'm not going to get a 1099 for it. Plus, I'm getting my initial investment back from the auction company that I bought it from. Can I invest the $50,000 into a retirement plan and not pay tax on it, even though the money didn't come from there originally? No. So here's how it works. Depending on what name you did the purchase in and what you settled on these things, your name's somewhere on there. That's who got the income. And it's ordinary income under those circumstances. You're basically a wholesaler. It's kind of a weird thing. I guess that what you could say, depending on your intent when you purchased it, I can't even see that being long-term capital gains. Like, I think that's just going to be ordinary income, period. If it's ordinary income and it's your name, then what you could do is, if it's ordinary income, then yeah, you can do retirement plans against it in the name of whatever it is that you actually did it through. So if you did it through a corporation, then you're in luck. If you did it through your individual name, then you might not be. But we have plenty of time to try to offset.
Yeah.
Anything else you can think of?
No, I'm still surprised that he was able to get $50,000 profit on, in addition to his original $50,000.
Hey, you tied up a property. So you got your, yikes. He must be a pretty high-end property. So way to go. Individual name. How can I read it? This is something where you're going to need to email on into us or reach out, or Patty, you might want to grab his information so you could have a consult with a tax advisor. We actually need to see the documents, but there's always a way. Patty will get it from you. I don't want to read your name on online. All right, here's that stuff. All right, so one of the things you can always do to get lots of answers to questions is go on. You'll realize that we have quite literally hundreds and hundreds of hours of Q&A online. So like you're looking at one, how to legally write off your cell phone. I saw that question asked tonight. So you could go right to it and watch the video on how to legally write off your cell phone and not have to wait for me. Go on to Facebook, YouTube. Anderson has a great channel on YouTube and subscribed. You can see a whole bunch of fun stuff out there. It's freebies. Other thing you can do is go to iTunes and sign up for the Anderson Business Advisor podcast. All right. This RM stuff is even getting better. He used somebody else's IRA money. That is pretty good. I want to be you. All right, Google Play, you can get in and you can watch these things for free. The beautiful part is on these podcasts is myself, Clint Coons, Michael Bowman, Jeff here. We're constantly spewing out material that is as timely and relevant. And you can kind of just go in there and see all the fun stuff that we're always putting out there. There's everything from, like, I'm just looking at the Google Play. You can read it yourself, but business deductions, there's Tax Tuesday, residential assisted living, how to set rents, importance of insurance, all these things, cost segregation, how to do that. There's so much fun stuff that you can get in and participate in, and it's free. Again, just go to Google Play or go to iTunes, and it is free to sign up, and then you get to access to all this fun stuff. I'm still going to go through your guys' questions, so don't worry. I'm not getting rid of it. TaxWise Workshop, this is over 30 strategies. We recorded one in January, and we're going to do another one in June, another one in November. They're all a little different because at different times of the year, focus on different things. So tax planning is a big one in January and November. In June, we are just nailing anything that we can that we could possibly write off. And so the offer for anybody that comes onto a Tax Tuesday, and this isn't a, we're going to take it away and hide it from you. We're offering this. This year is AndersonAdvisors.com, the 3-for-1. You can see the little URL there. It's $197 for all three. It's the live streams where you're not physically showing up. You're watching via the live stream from home. and you get all the replays on all three. Now, you might say, why the heck would I do that to myself? And I'm just saying, hey, if you spend a little bit of time, 1 year of your life, and you dedicate and you spend some time really learning taxes, every time you watch a TaxWise, you're going to pick up two or three things. You watch it three times, you're going to pick up close to 10 things. Those little 10 things will save you over $10,000 a year. That's what our stats have shown us over and over and over again. So spend a little bit of time in 1 year and save yourself a lot of money. That's always kind of fun. Questions? Ask your questions Tax Tuesday at Anderson Advisors. Visit AndersonAdvisors.com. That's how you get your questions answered. Go to Google Play. Go to the subscribe to our podcast. Go to iTunes. There's lots of ways to get in. Anyway, so lots of fun stuff. If you have complicated questions, shoot them into Tax Tuesday. We'll get you routed to the right place. And we love your complicated questions. Now, think of complicated questions. I got a lot of questions I got to ask, and we're going to start busting through them because that's what we do. We're going to just answer a ton of questions. So let's see if we can find some. With an LLC tax as a C-Corp, how can I avoid paying unemployment on myself being the only person in the company? You don't have to pay unemployment on yourself if you are in a C-Corp and you're paying yourself wages and you're the officer.
Right.
So
You have to be the owner also.
Yep. So where do you find these opportunity zones has been asked. Patty will get you the stuff. The easiest way is to type in opportunity zones heat map. Opportunity zones heat map. Can I run a flip business in an opportunity zone through an LLC registered in the same state, or is it required to have a fund? The fund could be anywhere, but the fund, in order to qualify as an opportunity zone fund, has to have 90% of its business property in opportunity zones. It doesn't say any particular one, so you can set up one opportunity zone fund and it could own a whole bunch of different properties and investments and all these other opportunity zones. So technically an opportunity zone business, by the way, the regs just came out. They said, hey, if 50% of its wages paid for the company is in an opportunity zone, that's an opportunity zone business. So if you are a coder or you're somebody who develops software, things like that, you should really consider setting one up in an opportunity zone. Yeah, because if you sell that company for $30 million in 20 years, you're not paying any tax. Can I purchase and sell real estate without selling the LLC or dissolving the LLC? Yes, you can. What about additional cost of putting kids on payroll if the Social Security and Medicare tax is 15%? So John, yes, if you run them through payroll on a corporation, if you run them through payroll on a sole proprietorship or partnership with the parents, then there is no withholding requirement or there's no Social Security on it, although they would still have to pay it. They're going to be responsible for it. You just don't have the withholding requirement. So anytime a kid is making money, just remember Social Security and Medicare are part of it. But if they are, it's so small.
Right.
So,
and it helps pay for my retirement, although they'll never see a penny of it. But
yeah, and they're going towards their quarterly. So don't trip on pennies on the way to the dollars. Right. I was asked this, the standard deduction, is it going to offset? They're still going to have a little bit of Social Security tax, right?
Yeah, they're going to have the Social Security and Medicare tax. They just won't have any federal withholding.
You know, because you could actually have your kids set up an LLC. I actually did this. It's horrible, but I set up an LLC and my daughter owned it and I managed it. And we worked really hard to make sure she made money in that thing. And that's how she paid her tuition. So she had the self-employment tax, but it was like to pay her year's tuition, it was about $400 and it would have cost me close to $15,000 or something like that. It was ridiculous. Let's see. Any risk in starting a holding LLC and moving an existing LLC to it? Not really. What you're doing with the holding is that's an outside liability issue. You're saying, hey, nobody can take all my stuff. When you have inside liability, like, hey, I have a piece of property in an LLC, I don't want that property directly in the holding. I want that in an LLC underneath it. So that I'm saying I'm always willing to give up that one property. Or if I have two properties in an LLC, that's my exposure. If I have three properties in an LLC, then I could lose all three. But if I have three LLCs, each with one property, then my maximum exposure per incident is one property. If somebody comes after me, my maximum exposure is they take all my properties, and a holding LLC cures that. So that's why we use the holding LLC.
So what if the LLC they're wanting to move into another LLC may have existing issues?
That you got to be a little careful. If you have liability, then you don't want to throw.
Like I found out the house I own is built on an EPA Superfund site.
Oh, that's always fantastic. And it's in an LLC?
Yeah.
Then I would just keep that out separate. I don't want to move that thing around. The easiest way to look at it is if you have existing liabilities, then the courts are like a cat and you're a mouse. The mouse that runs across the floor is the one that gets pounced on, so you don't move. So I always tell people, they do crazy stuff, and I'm like, dude, just don't move. Maybe they won't see you. Right. At that point, that's your hope. And then you deplete it. You just over time, you deplete it. There are some things you can do, but you don't move that mouse. Let's just put it that way. The holding company, the holding LLC, the parent company and the other LLCs created for the house is purchased. America. Yes, that's absolutely the way you do it. The sub LLCs own the actual real estate in the states where that real estate is owned. The holding LLC is usually owned in a state like Nevada or Wyoming, and it just holds the LLCs. That's called personal property. It owns the personal property, which is the shares in the LLCs or the membership interest in the LLCs. Here, somebody says, from what I understand, a living trust provides no liability protections. Its purpose is to ease the distribution of my estate upon my death, right? Yes. So first off, living trust springs into it's there while you're alive, but you can change it. It's basically just, I always tell people, it's a piece of luggage and it holds all your stuff. And if you die, there's instructions that says, here's who to give my stuff to. I open up the living trust, I open up the suitcase and I hand my shirts to so-and-so. You know, it's just giving out specific things of what should happen. So it's not an asset protection tool, but it's something everybody needs. So how do I cover my butt if somebody slips and trips on my personal residence? Okay, first off, there are ways to protect your personal residence. Some states you don't even have to, like in Texas and Florida, you have unlimited homestead exclusion. That's why O.J. Simpson, where did he reside after all the trials and tribulations? He went to Florida. Now he's out here in my neck of the woods because we have a $575,000 exclusion. They just can't take it. But someone does get hurt on my property and sicks his lawyer after me, can my LLC take a loan out? Yeah, so I see what you're saying. So they said, hey, are there ways to protect my house? Yes. Are there ways to protect your house without doing anything crazy and causing yes, absolutely. Depending on your state, you have homestead exclusions. If you don't have a big homestead exclusion, it may be wise to put a high equity property into an LLC or to encumber that property before a liability occurrence happens. If you go after, it's too late. You have a fraudulent conveyance issue. But if you have to borrow against your house to pay the lawyers to defend yourself, you can actually do that. It ends up being kind of a pain. So Kevin, the answer is you should probably talk to one of our folks here and see whether you actually have an issue. You might be surprised that you don't even have to worry about it. It always depends. It's always the equity that's available and whether there's some things we can do to protect that equity. It's usually a quick fix and it doesn't cost anything. If I fund my LLC checking account with funds from my self-directed IRA, do I earn income on the business or do I have to put profits back in that self-directed IRA? You cannot get any benefit out of it whatsoever. So if you have a LLC owned by a self-directed IRA, you cannot be charging it a fee. You cannot be doing anything. It all goes back in the self-directed IRA or 401k. There is one exception, which is if you open up a C Corp and you partner on that C Corp with your retirement plan. It's called a ROBS, rollover as a business startup. And my partner, Clint Coons, has spoken on it considerably. If you just Google, or better yet, go to the Anderson Business Advisors YouTube page and type in ROBS, or just type in Clint Coons, ROBS, R-O-B-S, and you'll be able to see it. How to financially handle or handle cash a $10,000 profit from a wholesale transaction. For example, can I take a DBA 1099 it? So the answer is no. If you've already earned it, then you're making it. If you made a wholesale profit, that's ordinary income. That's going on a Schedule C.
Right.
It's already left the barn. I would always do your wholesales through a corporation, by the way. I want to write off things against it, and I don't want to have a taxable transaction until the end of the year.
And in this case, you could have put the property in the corporation before the sale.
Yeah, you can even do that. So all you have to do is, it's always the sale that's the kicker. How can I write off a car to an LLC or an S Corp? When you're doing a car, we've talked about this before, you have two choices. If it's the actual expense method, or you're doing miles, or the company is going to own it. So I tend to not want companies to own cars unless that's like a real essential part of it. So like if you're driving around and you have advertising on your car and things like that, then maybe, but it's got to be greater than 50%, or you have horrific tax problems. I never have a problem if I'm just reimbursing miles. So I tend to be the mileage reimbursement guy. Path of least resistance that gives me the biggest benefit. I don't have to care about anything about whether it's 50% or 51% or anything like that. So if you're doing that, then the smartest thing to do is to get Mile IQ and then just say when you're doing business miles, when you're doing personal miles.
Yeah.
Now, if you're commuting between your home and an office, that is not a business mile. If you have a home office and you're commuting between a home and an office, and by the way, if you're using a corporation, then you've heard me talk about this before. Your rules are different. You don't have to have the traditional home office. You can have an administrative office in your home that it reimburses you for. Then every time you drive, it's a business mile. That's my favorite, obviously. It's 58 cents a mile this year. So you do 10,000 miles, you can write yourself a check for, what is that, 10,000 miles, $5,800, and not have to pay tax on it. So it ends up being quite a bit. How do you set up a health savings account? Like TD Ameritrade has them. You can always do a health savings account, put some money in it. You have to have a high deductible insurance. That's the only rub on it. So you got to make sure your deductible is really high. Off the top of my head, I don't know if I have HSAs.
I don't think it's on there.
Yeah, I'm looking at a cheat sheet that I have, and I don't have my HSAs. I think it's like $6,700 or something for a family.
Yeah, it's like, I think, $3,450 for single and $6,566 for married.
I work with investors to purchase deeds. Can I use a personal property trust and have my LLC as the administrator and their entity as the beneficiary? Oh, that's interesting. So you want to be the... You want to be the trustee is really what you want to be. And if you're getting paid for it, you may have some licensing requirements, but you can do that if you wanted to. You just have to look at the state in which you're doing it and whether they have a requirement. So if you're acting as a paid trustee, you may have some issues. Here we go. I'm 60 years old, single, and self-employed as a realtor. Can I borrow money from my self-directed 401k to do a rehab and then put it back in with the maximum yearly contribution? Yeah, you can do both. Absolutely. So if I have a 401k, the rules are I can borrow $50,000 or 50%, whichever one's less, of my account. So if you're a realtor and you're borrowing money, I guess I should be a little more exact. You can borrow up to $50,000, or you can always do the rehab inside of the 401k and not get paid for it. You can just let all the benefit go into your 401k. If you need money, you borrow it out, or you take it out and pay taxes, you take it out. Can you still do your maximum yearly contribution? Absolutely. It's secondary, like it's not tied to the loan. So I can always do my big payout, pay into it.
So yeah, if you took out $50,000 this year, there's nothing to keep you from putting $74,000 in the following year.
Correct. You can jam a whole bunch in there. If I buy a mobile home park, will I get the same tax benefits as buying and holding a stick brick residential real estate property with depreciation? So Jinhee, you know the answers on these?
Actually, the mobile home park, a lot of your expense is going to be what we call land improvements.
Yeah, that's not depreciable.
Well, that is depreciable. 15-year life for land.
Oh, land improvement. The land itself is not depreciable.
The land itself is not depreciable, but like your paving and stuff like that.
If the mobile homes are stuck to the ground, you know, every state has a little bit of a different definition, but it seems like the universal rule is if it's actually attached to the ground, then you depreciate it. And depending on how you're handling these, Jinhee, it's like part of it is, hey, if I have a mobile home and I'm able to depreciate that puppy and I'm renting it to people, I want that. If I'm selling it to somebody, then I'm going to do a lease option 9 times out of 10 if I'm in a mobile home park, and I'm still going to write it off. I'm going to depreciate it, and I'm not going to recognize that income until that option is either exercised or expires. So there's some definite ways to get some money in your pocket. Anyway, can I write off income we pay our nanny from a business account? That's kind of funny.
And I know somebody who tried that.
Yeah, I don't think you can.
You cannot do that.
Yeah, so that's a personal expense. What you can do, I don't even want to get into what you can do on a nanny. Let's just make it real clear. If it's a nanny, that's a personal. Just call it personal. Call it what it is. If you have a nanny that's cleaning, that's the only time where it gets different. Then I add that into my calculation for the home office deduction. But that's the only difference. And I break out and I would say, here's the part that's for the nanny. If your nanny's working in your office, like going in and helping out in your office, then some of that you would allocate that as potential as business income. But depending on your nanny and whether, you know, how they're here, if they're an au pair or something from another country, you may not be able to do that.
Yeah. And keep in mind with somebody like a nanny that you're probably going to have to pay household employee taxes on them. Mm-hmm. Basically their Social Security and their unemployment, things like that.
If you're over $600 a year.
The all payer, those tend not to have those because the agency is paying for them.
You're paying a third party who's actually covering it as opposed to the individual themselves. All right. So if you have expenses to attend real estate related training events, but no longer have properties and you haven't bought or sold any real estate, can you still deduct the expenses even if you don't have any, you don't have an entity set up? The answer is no. The Woody case kind of put a big old fork in that one. You got to have the real estate or they don't let you write it off. They'll let you call it, you'd actually have to set up an entity and then they'd probably wrap it in as a startup expense and let you write it off over 15 years or $5,000 first year, 15 years the rest. But as an individual, they don't let you write off the training unless you're actually doing it. So my LLC is only owned by my C corporation. Why do they want an operating agreement? Because your LLC still has to have a body. So you have a C corp and you have an LLC. Both are people as far as the courts are concerned, as far as banks are concerned, as far as liability is concerned. And you have a disembodied LLC because it doesn't have an operating agreement. So your birth certificate is your certification of filing. So your articles or whatever you want to call it, you file with the state. That's like a birth certificate. The body is the operating agreements for the LLC or bylaws for a C corp. And then its vitals is your books. And then every year it does a little checkup, which is the tax return, just like a normal person. So why are they asking for an operating agreement? Because it's a person and they want to see its body. All right. Somebody says, sorry, I feel like I'm asking this incorrectly. I bought a flip in my QRP. When the QRP sells, will it be required to buy another home inside the QRP to avoid taxation? No. Roger, it is a tax exempt entity, so it can just sit on that cash. It's not like you and me where we have a capital gain event where we have to do something to avoid it.
What happens in QRP stays in QRP.
Yeah, that's a good one. It happens in your QRP, stays in your QRP. All right. If I were to have an online health coaching business where people can complete and purchase transactions through an automated website, how will the income produced from this online business be taxed? Will it be taxed as passive income or earned income? So online health coaching sounds active to me. That would be earned income. If you have intellectual property, like you publish a book and they are... Well, they're still buying your book. You wouldn't have a royalty income. You'd have to have a third party selling your stuff and paying you to sell your stuff. Then you could get some passive income. That would be a license fee or a royalty, which is portfolio income, technically.
Right.
To make Jeff happy. If I call it passive, he'll get all mad.
Well, I'm okay with passive because it goes on Schedule E, page one, yeah. Just like your rental properties do.
So, but if you're doing something and you're selling it, then it's active. Can the holding LLC pay the bills for a subordinate without breaching the boundary between the two entities? If there's an agreement in place that says that it can, then yes. And usually there is an agreement that says that the member may advance expenses on behalf of the other companies. Do you have a problem with that?
Hmm.
No. So they're all going to end up being on the same return anyway. But it's always best to have something in writing. If you're with Anderson, we document the hell out of everything. If you've set up your entity but haven't spent money on behalf of this entity, but have expenses for coaching out of your personal account, that's kind of a weird question. I don't know what the question is. Is this a concern? No, you can always reimburse yourself. So the way to always look at it is if you spend money and you have not all entities are created equal. It needs to be a corporation from a tax standpoint. So an LLC taxes an S, LLC taxes a C, C Corp or S Corp, then you can do a reimbursement, an accountable plan, and it can reimburse you anything that comes out of your pocket. So if you pay for something, if I buy donuts for the office, my employer can write me a check. If you are the employer as the corp and you are also the individual, it can write you a check. So if you incurred expenses for training and it's for the benefit of the employer, they can reimburse you. We talked about that earlier about tuition for kids and stuff like that. This is one of the ones where if it's benefiting the business, it can reimburse you. Let's see. Someone recommended either Capital One or business or Wells Fargo because they work best with Anderson. How important is it to use one of those banks? It's not important. You can use whoever you want. Wells Fargo, we've done well over probably 10,000 accounts with them, and they understand nominee. Capital One's really aggressive right now, growing, but it's whatever works for you. You don't have to do what's best for us. We don't get paid a nickel. We don't care. We just like it to work with banks that understand us. And if you have anonymous ownership, most screw it up. So we like the ones that don't. What do we Google to find those 180 pages of new opportunity zone regulations? Oh, you want to go read regs?
Holy I don't know crap. Why Congress didn't even read them.
No, opportunity zone fund regulations. And you'll see that there was some issued in October and some issued 2 weeks ago. You literally just Google what you're doing. I just picked a site. website. It's called TobyGoogle.com. And I'm going to say, be mean and say it's the greatest answer site on the planet. And it's, of course, just going to be Google. Probably get sued for it. It's all right. If I fund my LLC checking account with funds from my SDIRA and I earn income on the business, do I have to put the profits back in? Yes, I think I already answered that. Let me go back. If you're creating LLC taxed as an LLP, it's actually as a partnership, it's least audited, and you are going to acquire some real estate and sell some, should you name the entity something that has investor in it to make sure that you are an investor, not a flipper? It doesn't matter at all. So it says, like, if I name it 123 Property Investments LLC rather than 123 Wholesale Property, that way your intent, I mean, Mark, you're making, like, you're actually thinking really clearly. That's really smart. I would call it what it is, but it's not really going to affect your audit rate, because for corporations, the audit rate is a peppercorn for if you're flipping. So if you're doing it, if you're flipping right, you're doing it through an S corp or a C. Your audit rate is between 0.03 and 0.07. If you're doing it as a partnership or as an individual, your audit rate's still probably about 0.7. It's such a fractional percent. They almost never, like, you have to really screw it up to get audited when you set these things up right. We just don't see that many audits.
No, we don't.
How many audits did we have in the last year, do you think?
I don't know that we had any.
Yeah, it's like we do thousands of returns. And when I say thousands, I'm saying like thousands upon thousands of returns, we see almost no audits. The reason being is if you set it up, you have to really, if you do it right, if you follow what the IRS tells you, you have to really do something screwed up to get audited. And we won't let you do that. We'll bug you. Let's see, if you had set up an entity and spent money on behalf of the entity, but you paid it out of a personal account, can you get the money back? Yes, it can reimburse it. It's a startup expense or just an ordinary. If you haven't gotten the benefit out of it, then it's just an ordinary expense that it can be paid back. Additional costs, I bought a house at auction, we already did that one. I'm in the process of buying a single home to turn into a residential assisted living for seniors. Jinhee, you get a big star. Once I hire an operating manager to find some long-term residents and caregivers, I'm planning on being the owner but not being involved. All right, so here's how you do this. Whenever you have residential assisted living, you have the real estate and you have the business. And it's real important that you understand that there's two very different things. The business is an active business and the real estate is passive. So I would put the house in an LLC and I would lease it to the operating business. And the way you get more money out of it is you jack the rent up. And if you are an S corp and you're an operating business, but you're not participating, then you're a passive owner and you're not going to have social security income on it because you're not materially participating. So Jinhee, you're not going to pay much tax. We'll find a way to offset it with your, especially with your, on your real estate. Since you're kind of on both sides, you can set the rents right so that you're not getting killed in tax. You're going to take advantage of your depreciation. And then on the business side, you may still have a bunch of profit, but it's going to be passive. It's not going to be subject to old age, death, and survivors, and Medicare. It's actually a good thing. And since it's an S-Corp, you don't get hit with the net investment income tax, do you?
Right,
either.
No.
So you're going to avoid the little sneaky, we call it the Obama tax, the 3.8% that they get you when you make too much money. So we'll still, there's ways to make sure. All right, I'm going to go to the very end. So the guys who just asked questions, you're going to get a big, you're going to get a little big one up. I need to build up my QRP. What's the fastest way to build it up? You sold a 401k and jam it full. But if you really want to go crazy, I'll tell you what. So if you're making a lot of money, then instead of controlling the contribution and defining the contribution, which is what a defined contribution is the 401ks and IRAs, those are defined contributions. You define the benefit and you reverse engineer it and you say, how much money have I been making and how much money would I have to have in my retirement plan to make that when I retire? So if I need $200,000 a year coming out of my retirement plan at 70 and a half or 67 or whatever you designate as your year, you do what's called a cash balance or a defined benefit plan. I have one client who put $615,000 into their defined benefit plan this year, all tax deductible. And boom, they had a pretty big fat retirement plan. And so, yeah, so what you do, again, is talk to us and let somebody actually guide you in the right direction so that you're getting the most benefit that you can. What's the difference of an LLC and a corp? What are the advantages of an LLC? An LLC is a creature of state, and they're a little bit easier to operate. And in some states, they have more protections than the corporation. So in Nevada, for example, they is the only state where they actually have protections on corporate shares. So if you wanted to protect your company from third parties coming in and taking your shares, you had to use an LLC. But an LLC can be taxed in any way you select with the IRS. So it could be a sole proprietorship, a partnership, an S-corp, or a C-corp. So the big difference between an LLC taxed as a corporation and a corporation is if you lose money, the what's called a 1244 stock loss can only be applied against stock, not against membership interest. So if you're going to lose money, Evelyn, you might want to use a plain old vanilla corp. Otherwise, an LLC tax as a corp gets the job done just fine. I am driving for Uber and Lyft. It's not my primary job, though. Is it better to do an LLC or file as an individual? I can just tell you, Rodney, do not file as a sole proprietorship, period. It's 700% more likely to get audited than an S-Corp, and the sole proprietors lose 95% of the time, 93 to 97, better average of 95% of the time. You're so much better off from a audit standpoint and a tax standpoint of being an S-Corp if you are making around $30,000 a year. If you're making like nothing and you're just not making a whole bunch, then maybe start off as the sole proprietor.
Yeah.
But that, like, you better be not making much. Otherwise, the numbers get pretty crazy pretty quick. Because in a sole proprietorship, you're paying old age, death, and survivors and Medicare on every dollar, whereas in an S-Corp, it's only on what you distribute beyond your a small salary. So, excuse me, you pay the tax only on the small salary. Everything else is not subject to it. It ends up being, the math is 14%. So if you make 50 grand, you're going to save quite literally about 7 grand by being an S-Corp. So it's not quite that clean, but it's pretty darn close. So, and there's some other benefits. You can do an accountable plan and all sorts of things that you can't do as an individual. My personal home is paid for. Is there any benefit to put it in an S-Corp LLC or passive LLC? Not really. What's kind of fun is if you're going to rent it to somebody, you sell it to an S-Corp and step up the basis so that you get it. It's kind of fun. You get the money back that on an installment sale. It's kind of fun. Or if you have your home and you're going to stay in it, you just don't want anybody to be able to take it from you, then we look at your state homestead first, and then we can slap a LLC around it. It does not hurt you, other than it could nix out your homestead if you're like in Florida. So we just have to look to see where you're at, how big your homestead is. Is there a minimum age for setting up an LLC with a minor? 10-year-old lease in Washington. I think it was in Washington State. The minimum age for contracting is 18 years. So
yeah,
you'd set
I was
going to
say.
Yeah, so they could still be an owner, and as long as they're making active income, it's not part of the kiddie tax. If they're going to be the member, it's more than likely you're going to have to be on that thing signing on their behalf. So you'd have to have somebody. Realistically, if you have a 10-year-old, you're not going to have them own anything. You're just going to pay them out of your sole proprietorship LLC if that's what you're trying to accomplish. Or you just, if they're able to do work, you pay them, and they just don't pay much tax, as in like next to anything. Like a 12-year-old or a 10-year-old is not going to be able to make much. So if you're paying them more than $5,000, and you like literally, this is what you do. You pay them something small, and you put it in a Roth IRA, and they never pay tax on it ever. And that money in 60 years is going to be worth a ton. So it's like, just get it in there. Let's see. Turn my residence into a rental while updating my insurance coverage, include my newly formed LLC, raise suspicion. Maybe you're worried about somebody triggering the due on sale clause. No, just toss it. What I would do is, like, if I want to be really clear, Elijah, what I would probably do is use a land trust and have the LLC be the beneficiary and just keep my name on as trustee. If you contact your insurance and you say, I want an additional insured, that's not going to trigger that. Usually that's not going to go straight back to the lender. But again, it's up to you as to, I've never seen the Garden St. Germain Act have to be used. Mm-hmm. I've just never seen due on sale. Like, I think once on back when the interest rates were rising 15 years ago, I saw one where they just said, hey, we don't want it in the LLC. Could you please take it out? But I've never seen it when it actually get triggered. Anyways, that's fun stuff. I think that we've hit enough. Guys, if you have questions and you're like, dang it, Toby and Jeff, you guys didn't answer it, email it on in. We'll get to it. We'll still work. There's a whole bunch of questions that got emailed in that I'm going to probably double up and even go over more questions next time.
We got a minute for a couple tax pointers, something we ran across recently.
Yeah, absolutely. Go.
So IRS finalized most of their tax reforms about a month ago. So, of course, Congress has come in and decided they may extend some things, that some credits that sunsetted in 2017. So IRS is extremely happy. So some of the credits, like the what's called the non-business credit for like doors, windows, things like that, right now that doesn't exist. So if you're eligible for, or maybe eligible for some of these credits, you may want to hang on to see if IRS makes these retroactive, which they're kind of expecting to do. The non-resident energy credits, there's the electric plug-in credit and certain other ones.
They came back and they were going to do those.
Yeah, they're working on them now. So, but right now they don't exist. The other item is there's a change to distributions from qualified plans, what's called the qualified retirement plan loan offset, which means you left a job while you had a 401k loan. Well, when you do that, they have to make that a distribution, but they changed the rollover rules just for those loan distributions. The typical rule is you have to reinvest those or roll those funds over in 60 days. For distributions from a qualified retirement plan loan, those distributions have to be rolled over by the extended due date of your tax return now. So if you got the distribution on January 1st of 18, you actually have until October 15th of 2019 to get that done. So something to be aware of if you run into that situation where you leave an employer with a loan distribution.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I didn't know you could go that far out. Hey, gosh, you guys keep asking questions. You guys are killing me. But it is a credit or deduction. It is a deduction. You get a $30,000 deduction, Todd. That was on the 1244 stock loss. It's just a loss, I take it. So it's proportion. Yeah, I wish it was a tax credit. Tax credit offsets your tax liability dollar for dollar. Tax deduction just takes offsets your income.
Right.
Somebody said, hey, you know what? That guy that was doing the Uber and the Lyft said they're doing about $30,000 a year. So this is how it gets fun. If you're making $30,000 a year net, you would normally take about a $10,000 salary. $20,000 would avoid 14.1%, which would save you $2,800. If you do an S Corp Plus, I could take that $10,000 and put it all deferred into a 401k. So like the tax benefits we can get are pretty significant unless you need to live off of every dollar. So that's always the fun. Do you have a suggestion on software to use for accounting purposes to help us newbies on the wholesaling and flipping? Yeah, don't buy the software. Don't do, QuickBooks is going to be your best thing for books, but I would do QuickBooks online and I would have a bookkeeper actually do it for you. Like I wouldn't try to learn this stuff. Just keep track in a spreadsheet or something. The best thing is just to hand it to somebody and say, please do it. So, hey, Rodney, you want to email us in and have somebody actually run the numbers for you. We could actually do the projection for you and see what it saves you. Make sure that we got it. All right, guys, that's good for today. Thanks for participating. Thanks for all your questions. We have a ton to go over next time. Like, I apologize to those of you guys who emailed and we didn't get to you. We just get inundated sometimes. If I showed you guys, I don't even know how many questions there are, but there are quite literally about 20 pages of questions. You guys are getting better and better at asking questions, which is awesome.
But we need to answer about 5 every minute to get through them all.
You know what? Some of them are going back. I can hear Patty cackling out there. Somebody's cackling. You're dang funny. All right, guys. Anyway, thank you for hanging out. Sherry, watch out for them storms. Say hey to Don for me. There's some clients out there that we know. Thanks for your questions, Steve, Jenny, Stephanie. Yes, it is recorded. Rodney, Todd, Koya. We have a whole bunch of people that are really awesome. So thanks for joining us. Till next time, this is Toby and Jeff. Jeff, yep. Thanks for your time, man. You just got out of tax season, so he gets a big star. It's, it's within recent memory. Actually, we never stop. So we'll see you next time, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast, and if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.